session after supper, Wednesday, 1st of March, 73, Channel 1 right, beginning of our session after supper, the 1st of March, 73, Debbie and I have most of it, and I'm working with her on Virgil, you see, that process of discovery of what went on over there, this after supper, this Wednesday, the 1st of March, 73, Channel 1 right. He was a little worried about that rear spraying, and he didn't seem to have got any information from Eddie. Did you tell him what Eddie said?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I didn't tell him exactly what Eddie Tall said.
I see. You were softened.
If I just said it was a piece of junk, I didn't think that'd go over too well.
I told him about that front end. I said, Eddie said your spring will hold up all right, no more than you were out on it. But he said he was worried about that front end. And he hadn't heard about that. Well, anyhow, he's satisfied, and he hadn't got insurance, and he's not driving much. But we got off on these dogs again. And I forget how I told him we had to. He said, had you heard from your, when you, had you sent yours in? And he figured it'd take a month or two to hit them. I said, we have really got some good ones. Oh, this is Derry and the others. Oh, he says, that's just a start. And he started on one, a dog. Let me tell you, everything goes in the same direction. They had the dog, Big Joe or Big Ash or something, up in North Alabama. And he'd go out, and once he hit a trail, they'd all rush out. All the dogs. Everybody would rush out, and all the dogs too. Well, this time they started out. And I don't know what gave them the warning, but Mr. Weaver said they figured what was happening. One of them fellas could go just like that Big Ash.
Oh my.
And he said they just went on and just let him have his fun and run a half a mile or so. And I went back and I said, Mr. Weaver, come on over here and I want you to tell Rick that he can remember better than I can. And he went up. He had his mind on mowing. He had that pile of mower out there, I guess it was. I didn't see it. I didn't want to see it. He mowed the front. Looked to me like the drought had already mowed it. But in the back, he got all the weeds. And a little Handy Annie would do a whole lot better than that pile of mower, and it wouldn't cut your ankle off, cut your foot off at the ankle. Miss Mary and Marvin were just full of income tax. They'd got a new accountant, a new solicitor, and she said if she didn't save them $500, they wouldn't owe her a cent. Now that's the way Miss Mary likes to hear people talk. Told Miss Mary, you know, $1,400, I didn't know why in the world they'd pay that much income tax if they had expenses like I had. Things cost me so much over here just to stay in business. I didn't pay any income tax over here. accountant, some lady.
Oh, yeah.
She said three or four had come from that same one. She told Miss Mary that they paid more income tax than a farmer she'd ever seen.
Farmers that they just put down $89 for feed.
So they've always got something on. And then she sat down and she says, "Here I'm living in a shack and going naked." She says, "If you won't tell anybody," says, "if you ever tell this, I'll never tell you anything else." That little bird.
What'd she say? I want to hear what she say.
Now let's hear your reconstruction of what happened, Debbie. Well, how would you put it? How your eyes were closed so long?
I think that's a pretty good statement. Nothing ever occurred to me except the gun lessons. Then I ran out of the yard. I ran out of the yard and got in the chivvy. Virgil standing in the yard yelling, "I think we better have another pool game."
Did you put that in?
Oh my! I said, "Sure, Virgil." I had a different reason for every single thing that happened. I thought Shirley wanted me to meet Timmy, and I thought when Marvin said that took you all morning, I thought he was talking about Shirley's cow. The reason I thought Miss Mary was laughing so much was because I thought the next day was her birthday, and that's why she was so excited. All the wrong reasons. I didn't think anything of anything. Only thing I thought when Shirley told Virgil to come along was, "Oh, hell, now we won't talk about cows." She made me sit in the middle.
Well, all of that Monday night affair over here. You see, you had two full nights for this to come to you. Sunday night and Monday night.
It never did. I didn't get any of that Miss Mary said over here and Marvin. I didn't know Virgil was the little bird.
Well, you got to reconstruct what happened here.
When Marvin and Miss Mary came over, they started talking about Virgil. And Marvin said Virgil goes to bed 9 months of the year. He just gets up for the fishing season. And Miss Mary says he comes out and he's got his beard down to here.
No, I was the one that started it.
I believe you did, guy. Did you bring him up?
I didn't. Yes, I said, "Now what is that, Miss Mary? I hear about this little bird."
That's right, he did.
Oh, and then she goes right to Virgil, and that's how you knew. Did you know that's what she was talking about?
Sure.
Well, now you can listen to the tape
uh-huh.
and hear what it says and get it straight. What you want to do is reconstruct it now and make it right. Now you got to reconstruct that on the tape, that Monday night affair. Now this business on Sunday night. Now that's the part of it. That's all. That's the heart of the thing, really.
Watching them laugh and at the play. Because she's doing, the wife in the play is doing to her husband what they did to me. She's pulling a prank on him.
You can reconstruct the incident a little bit.
They have a big fight in the first scene in the sheets, in and out of the sheets, and hanging up the clothes. And they have a big fight, and she's going to get back at him for the fight, because he beats her up. And that's the whole thing. So she builds this elaborate thing about telling the passing people that he's a famous doctor out there gathering wood, and he's very eccentric, and the only way they'll get him to do anything is to beat him up. And see, that's, she thought it was just going to stop there. They'd go out there and find him and beat him up, and she'd get back at him. But instead, they take him off to town to cure this girl that doesn't talk. So the whole thing just keeps going and going. And the only people that know about it, the wife knows. And the audience. And nobody else in the play knows. Husband doesn't know. None of the people in the Duke's house know.
They all think he's a doctor.
They all think he's a doctor. And he thinks he is, too, after a while. By the end of the play, he does.
Well, now somebody being imposed upon. You want a little scene. Now that's a good one, you see, where you kind of hit the doctor listens to his pulse.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice little scene, little incident.
When he's playing being a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. He holds his wrist
and
takes the pulse and counts it off on his fingers. It slows it down.
Yeah. Is that the best one?
I think so.
The funniest one.
It's the funniest of his. It's when he's examining. The whole second act is his examination of the girl and then his diagnosis, and then he sends her off with his remedy, which is to put her to bed and have her eat bread soaked in wine, because wine loosens tongues. And then in the third act, he figures out what to do, because he finds her lover lurking around playing a mandolin under the balcony. So he knows he can really cure her, because he's got the boy that she really wants to marry. And this is why she's gone mute. She regains her voice and starts talking so fast nobody on stage can understand her. And so her father says, please make her mute again. Oh, and then when
all
she
right.
comes on and talks.
All right. Now you see, you've got to see it in Shirley, too, you see. Now, that she's going along with this, and she's sitting down, you see, with a straight face, and you all are talking.
That's the thing that got
over
me.
There,
mm-hmm.
And having a cup of coffee. And she's doing that for Virgil to tell about all that shooting and stuff, wasn't she? But instead,
she talks. She can't let him talk.
Yeah.
She takes over and tells that story about Berman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now look what you got. You see those two little pitiful pages you just gave me there? I got no spirit in them and very little content. You've got stuff here you can get into. Now, this, and then you see you've got to deal with Miss Mary. That's the chief one. And you've got to look back at it and see how you misjudged her. And put yourself in that awful light, you see. And pick up some of those crummy things you said about her. You had a rocking back and forth and all like that, you see, in your effort to rise to the occasion. You see, that's what to say. That's what you are in for.
That will make it fun. That will make it funny.
That's why I say you can't go off and leave it. But I think you've already lost it. Judging from this paper, you've lost it. And you just can't afford to lose that. That's one of the richest things that ever happened.
Really?
And you just can't knock that off in 15 minutes. One thing, you've got to reconstruct, you've got to go look and see what Ms. Mary said. Okay. Now, you've got those little incidents in Molière, but you and then you've got Ms. Mary, you see, gay about it all. You don't know what she's gay about. But now I don't know how you're going to work it. I don't know how you're going to work it. Because you may have to, I don't know, you see. You got to be abject in that. Because Tuesday night, you see, after we finally got you to look at it, you see, all you did was moan and lean against the door.
I don't know how you did do that, Debbie.
Oh, you really suffered and moaned and said, and just think, it was all a plan. Just as if your best friend had let you down. Oh, you were suffering. Now, you got to suffer in this thing, or else you might as well just forget about it. You got to suffer. Now, where you going to start suffering, I don't know. I don't know. You see, all this depends upon where you start. If you start that suffering right at the first, you can't do that. You can't maintain it. But you can work up to it. And then you can look back and see how you had all these chances to open it up. You had Molière, and then you had the tape on Monday night, and there you were, just blithe, you see. But you got to say what it is in Molière and what it is in Miss Mary, and that's where I can help you a little bit. Because it's a whole way of life that you've got to see in them. Now, Miss Mary, you see, one of the things that pranks that she got into, I can't give you the details, but I can find it, is they used to play Indian with these game wardens. Marvin and them would go out and sing with the game wardens laying for them. And they could, the game wardens would almost reach out and touch them and didn't know they was there.
And then they got the
fish and took them up to Windsor and sold them to Dick Wilkerson. Dick Wilkerson is the first fella I run into. He was really something. He had watermelons with Mr. Dodd the first year Mr. Dodd ever had them. And I'm telling you, that was something. If you want to see somebody with their ears flapping, you ought to have seen Mr. Dodd that time. Dick Wilkerson really had him. I never saw anybody who was had just as much. And there wasn't anything to do. They had a huge crop, and the price was in South Florida. You see, they'd been drowned out, or they'd had a freeze or something. They had a huge crop, and the price was huge, and furthermore, Dick Wilkerson had buyers. And they were just going to get rich. and Wilkerson wouldn't sell them. And he wasn't going to do anything about it. He was just going to told Mr. Dodd that he just didn't want him to lose. He'd just buy his pot out, and he wouldn't have to worry with it. Oh, he offered him $2,000. Well, the way it is, both of them got about $10,000. And Dick Wilkerson, that's one of Berman's buddies. I mean, Marvin's. And he's the one that run the bootleg fish market up at Windsor, you see, when Marvin and them fellas was pranking with the game warden.
Oh, she's got stories.
And you see, they knew they could get around the wardens because they had one friend, one warden who was their friend and would tell them when to lay low.
And then
she
the time
was right in it. She was the sentinel. She was the one who
you heard
kept
that
free.
That.
You heard that?
Mm-hmm. And the knife that stole the boat?
No, I didn't. I heard the one about the pig's head.
And the night they stole the boat right from under the warden's nose, I mean, it was a prank to do it.
Now, let me tell you, you could get fired. Anybody going off of these cold porter and Molière things with all this great high comedy and all like that and come out here and be so damn flat-headed, I'm telling you, they ain't any use to keep on.
Oh, shoot.
I never saw such a... Now, let's see if we can talk it out. I'm not bright right now, but I'm not quite as dim-witted as I was yesterday. I see... Now, you don't know what they did in that neoclassic comedy. They exposed the follies of the age. But the thing of it is, they had such glee in representing the follies. You didn't really know whether their object was to expose them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Now that's one of the moot questions, and you'll never know. See, all that bedroom comedy and all like that, exposing the follies of age. They were so lighthearted, you see, in the handling of those follies and vices, you see, and the follies is the best word, follies. They were so lighthearted about it. Now you want to get a nice little lighthearted scene and make it lighthearted, exposing the follies of the age. Now that's what he did, Molière did. That's what you saw him do. Now, you've got to represent yourself watching up there at Molière. You've got to put yourself in it and what you saw in it. You don't care how much time you take. You can take 2, 5, 6, 8 pages. It don't matter, just so you get it in. You don't need much. And make that little scene come to life, you see, with them exposing the follies of age. Well, now that's satire, and satire is the whole raison d'etre of the neoclassical period. That's their main instrument.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they did everything, through satire. Well, it's all gone now. No one has a feel for it anymore. You have to cultivate it. You see, you have to enter it as a scholar. You can't just, you know, you weren't brought up with it. Now that's it. You see, that's satire. And the satire is the same thing is using ridicule. That's what satire is ridicule. And ridicule means not what it means to us, you see, but it means to laugh at the follies, and that will shame people, and that's that will mend the times. Now that's it. Now you see, the clearest statement of that in on our side, you see, is in the Spectator papers. They have paper after paper after paper showing how they will amend the follies of the times, one after another. And what if I had my, if I wasn't so indolent and didn't go in town, I've got all those things there and we could read them. And they that's rich. That's right. But now it all that that's in the Spectator it underlies Molière. It lasted for a century. It started first in France, early in France, you see, before it got to England. Now you got to transfer it to Miss Mary, and you see you've got the same material that I've got, now you see for one thing, Miss Mary is a spirit, and like she said today over there, I said to her, "You get paid off for that land, you be ready to take a trip." She says, "Mr. Miles, they ain't a trip I want to take." Now, where do you hear anybody saying that? Where do you hear that?
You don't.
Yes. You see, look at that. Right there, she's right where she wants to be. She'd like to have just a little better conversation, you might say. She'd like to have a little bit more of the pranks going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the light touch. She'd like to have that, you see, and people she can talk to. But when she talks to them, she wants to do this outlandish talk and make those huge statements and then sit there and chuckle for a good while while somebody else is talking. Then she'll come out with something. See, she's preserved. Now that's something. Mr. Nealon has held forth. You see, he has done the same thing. He could. The one thing that hurts him is the Dadburn hearing. You see, I sometimes wonder which is worse. Hard of hearing or hard of seeing. And the hard of hearing, I didn't realize just how it impairs a person's getting around. I don't know. It might be better to have the stomachache or to have the arthritis or something else be down the back than the hearing.
Mm-mm.
Now that's the chief thing that Mr. Nealon has to put up with. But he overcomes that. If he can get a toehold, and he's an expert at that, you see, in the talk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now all those things that you put out on that little sheet of paper, I don't know just what you're going to make of them, but the thing, I told you that, the thing that stuck in my mind is that county agent wrote him and says, "Those times when we was riding in your car."
Mm-hmm. That's the best picture of him.
Yes. It's the best picture because it's the most promising. Because you can pursue it. And when you see him, he'll do all those things. He'll go like a Scotchman, and he'll
go like a cracker.
tell you about all those things they did.
Mm-hmm.
Things besides putting in cedar posts. Now you see, we've already got. I don't know why I'm looking at you all the time. I look at Faye or Rick. You already got. I used to do that in class. I always, somehow, they wanted to. I'd talk to, and they'd make them so nervous. I just don't like to talk to the whole class. I like to talk to somebody in class, you see. I don't know why in class you can't talk to somebody back and forth. The others can hear, can't they?
Yeah. And I don't get off the subject. I don't want to, you know me, I don't want to get too many things in my mind.
Well,
I want to stick with Miss Mary.
Well, now there you are. There you are. You see, now that's the thing about Miss Needham. And we got that cruiser business, you see.
Oh, yes.
Whoever thought we'd get that? Whoever thought we'd get that lumber camp?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever thought we'd having grubbing out lighted stumps over in Flagler County? Well, we don't have he didn't give us all the straight information on that, but he sure gave us that other stuff, didn't he? He did. Yes, sir. You sitting around here, we can all take a chapter and help put this together. What do you want me to do?
Seems like Daddy ought to listen to that tape. Maybe reconstruct that and get it straight. What do you think?
That's a good idea.
And get you some medicine. He ain't going to let you leave him to him yet. I mean, you must stay up home. He don't haunt you.
I can bring you coffee every 4 hours. Throw rocks at you in the pan.
Yeah, put a tombstone outside. This is what's going to happen to you.
Hang it. And you never do. We're all so enthusiastic, you see, and it's at David's expense. It's not really.
God, I've been working all day.
Who's that with a deep voice?
Marvin.
Oh.
It's Marvin.
I don't see how you're going. I got to order a ton of fertilizer in the morning. And I don't know. We might better put in a little hay or something. If we had some hands around.
Y'all want to make some hay at a dollar before they're gone?
No.
Make some? Or buy some?
Make some. Put in fertilizer and then put your hay in it. Grass goes. Well, not tomorrow, not next week.
Take a couple weeks for it to come up, wouldn't it?
6 weeks back.
What are you making hay for?
Well, he's thinking about this early summer.
But we just came along and we telling him about it, and he said, He said, that ain't right. And he looked at part of the papers, and he said right away, he said, and I showed him the copy of, you know,
you must have a favorite.
Is it on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did one. You said you can't handle that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go there,
you better blow it out.
Wax cake.
Blow
it out. Mary, what did that little bird tell you?
What little bird?
The one that you was talking to Daddy about.
Don't you remember?
My little Packy?
No. You know,
No.
Look at her carry
up. Best keep Debbie away from over there.
See, I'm playing in on it.
I know something.
You know, I never thought he'd come out.
He don't, only in the winter.
He'll crawl back in.
Just as soon as hunting season is over, he'll go back to bed.
We'll say that till about
he
first of November, and then he'll
I've
crawl back out.
I've seen his hair. Well, honest, this is the truth. If you don't believe it, ask somebody around the creek. He come out to the mailbox once or twice, and his beard would be right under there. And his beard would be standing out like this, and his hair down his back.
I never heard that.
He didn't have it this time, did he? Not now. No, it's gone off now. But it'll grow back this summer. You watch.
Maybe Debbie stays around him once.
Well, maybe you say. Yeah, he crawls out hunting season. He stays
there.
He
likes to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
When hunting season comes in, why he'd get out and fish or do something, make him some money, buy some gun shells, hunt through the season, and then when the season's over, well, he goes back to bed. And he lets his mom and daddy feed him till next hunting season.
Mrs. Dodd was telling Debbie said that Mrs. Dodd was saying that Virgil was just mighty smart. He knew everything about where the fish was and all.
He's smart, all right.
He might be.
He's smart enough to.
He
gotta work.
But he don't know too much about cows, I don't think.
Your cows know what that trouble is.
Hey, what's up? Miss Dodson there said, is Virgil's truck there? I'm going to come because it's Virgil's truck. It's not my truck.
See, maybe she should have said the magic word.
What was it? Why that?
Just tell them, come on, cows, I won't drive my truck today.
He didn't say it.
I didn't know that. Those cows wouldn't come.
They get used to a truck or one vehicle, but it's usually like
a miss going down to see my cows for 2 or 3 days and go down there, and they know it. I have to stand around them and walk amongst them and get them used to them.
Anybody goes down there with us, they act like they're just plumb scared to death.
Yeah.
It seems like they know, you know. They know a stranger.
Yeah.
They know if they've seen you before.
That is really good fruitcake.
It is.
She's
a
fruitcake.
She's
a date. Call them a date keeper.
Mm-hmm. Date keeper. Mm-hmm. A date keeper.
Got dates and coconut.
Really good.
You know, my old cows, last time, that yesterday when they was over there, they were nervous as they could be in hunching.
Not a whole. Someone, he did a little bit.
That
laughs. Why?
Y'all just quit making fun of my cows. Yeah.
Debbie and Virgil will go over and just have a
life
time.
What?
Miss Mary, you go along as chaperone?
Yeah.
All right.
Look, if no one Virgil knows. Come to see me last week.
Oh, he did?
No kidding.
What day was it, Monday?
Monday.
Yeah, he came and ate dinner with him. First time he'd been over in a long time.
Cool.
No, you just come over.
Talking about hunting?
No.
Not a whole. Someone, he did a little bit.
I asked him, did he feed him a turkey this time to see what he said he got.
Did he feed him a turkey?
Anybody we know?
No,
ma'am. You can't talk about anybody.
He hadn't seen anybody then, had he?
I don't know. He might have. That's what you're doing.
Well, John Henry is my favorite, and I'll never have
one of
him.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I don't know what in the world that family would do without John Henry.
John Henry is.
He is the backbone.
But you know, John Henry's pretty old, too.
He ain't no older than you are.
John Henry? John Henry was a grown man when I was just a little bitty kid.
Oh.
He sure was.
I wouldn't say that.
John Henry's right at 70 or better years old.
He ain't no use.
He
ain't no such thing.
John Henry sure is. Well, George is up in his 60s.
And John Henry's ahead of him?
John Henry's way ahead of George.
George ain't 60. The truth, if you don't believe it, ask somebody around the creek. He come out to the mailbox for.
And come and get it.
Whenever he wants to.
All the way home about.
Well, he'll want to whenever you just.
But every night we have one.
But you're not milking any.
Oh, no. My milk cow, she hasn't come fresh yet.
Well, I've got this little bull there. He's one of the prettiest little fellas. This cow, she always has pretty calves. But see, she's over age and grade, and I don't want to let her have to raise that calf.
You don't want her to have to raise it. Why?
Well, Virgin ain't got a teeth.
But you don't want her to raise it, and you want to raise the cat. Get you a bucket.
Oh, I don't want a bucket. I'm
hang it on the
mama.
Fence. One of them that you hang on the fence.
Yeah.
Just hang it on the fence and get you some of this powdered milk, you know, the regular calf milk that make it medicated.
Yeah.
I never did have any trouble with them.
I warmed up so fast.
You better.
You must have a fever.
Miss Mary's candle, that's what's
good. Yeah.
Yeah, but the candle has to go and have a.
You better blow it.